Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Speed City with John Massengill, Les Kaiser, and Jonathan Green. It's the fastest hour on the radio. Speed City.
All right, welcome to the show, gearheads. We are excited. We've got racing coming up, Formula One, in about a month. And this is one of the four special preseason shows that we're going to do to get you up to speed and excited about Formula One, because we are. This is John Massengill. Jonathan Green is with me, and special guest Dave O'Neill, who's going to be with us throughout the season, former team manager of the Haas F1 team. Dave, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much for having me.
And Les Kaiser is going to be back with us next week. He's not going to be here this week. But let me run down what we've got on the show, because speaking of the Haas F1 team, in just a moment, we're going to bring on the team principal, Günther Steiner, and really excited to have him on. And we're going to get his take, what he's been doing all this throughout this pandemic shutdown. And we're going to get lots of his insights about what to expect this season, what they've been doing. And we're also hoping to have really the highest ranking American in Formula One ladder, and that's Juan Manuel Correa. And he just got through with some online racing, so we're hoping to have him later in the show. But we're going to talk about everything that's been going on, everything from the upcoming F1 season, the races, how they're going to have, what's going to be different, and you name it, from reverse grids to you whatever you can imagine. So it's going to be an exciting show, and we are very excited. And in fact, we're going to go ahead and bring on right now the team principal to the Haas F1 team, Günther Steiner. Günther, welcome back to Speed City.
Hi, how are you doing?
We're doing great. How are you, sir?
I'm good, thank you. All good here.
You're in North Carolina, right?
Yeah, I'm in North Carolina.
Well, we're excited to have you back on the show, and we are really getting excited about Formula One, but we got to step back a little bit with these crazy times in 2020 and with the pandemic and everything that's been going on in the United States here. But how have you been getting along during all of that?
Thankfully, and nothing happened to me or my family. You know, I've got family in Italy and everything is good there, but in North Carolina, I came straight back from Australia to here early. Obviously, we left on Saturday, got here on Saturday, and haven't left since. I had to go once to Los Angeles to visit Mr. Haas for a day, but otherwise I was here and just working along. And I have to say, what have you been doing? A lot of people think we haven't been doing anything in these 3 months, but some of us has been working hard, because this is quite challenging for Formula One, having not knowing where we are going. When we stopped racing, we didn't know when we start again. We didn't know anything. We didn't know how much how our finances will look for the rest of the year, because obviously the income is coming from going racing, or some of it, not everything. You need some other money as well, but nobody knew how this pandemic is going to develop, and I think we still don't know, to be honest. But as you mentioned before, we go back racing pretty soon, which is a blessing in the sky for us, to be honest. At least you've got a target, we work for something, and we get ready now. So in a few weeks, we go racing again. So that's the good thing for us.
Well, Günther, have you guys been communicating as a team? I mean, like everyone else in the world, using Zoom and Skype and whatever else they can. Is that how you guys have been communicating?
Yes, we have been communicating always, and we are used to that because we have got bases in the US, in Italy, and in England. So we were quite used to video conferencing. But with the team, was the there is the FIA shutdown normally in August, where all the teams have to stop working for 2 weeks. This stop was taken early and prolonged. It was actually, instead of 2 weeks, it was 7 weeks when nobody was allowed to work except administrative staff. So with the technical staff at the race team, there was not a lot of contact because we couldn't speak about developments and going racing and anything operational anyway. So it was like with the top management, I was in contact. Just telling them what was going on, but the main work was done with the other teams, working on the budget cup, working when we go back racing, how we go back racing. There was a lot done, but we only used video conferencing, Zoom, Teams, whatever is around, we used it.
Gunther, I got to ask, I mean, what kind of shape is Haas F1 in as we approach Austria? It's the same for everybody, I get that, but I mean, we all know that, you know, you've kind of got your base in North Carolina, and then you've got the Europe contingent, and then everybody's got to get to Austria and so on and so forth. So from a logistics point of view alone, it's got to be hard. But I suppose the only way to look at it is that you're in the same boat as the other teams.
Yeah, no. Fortunately, 98% of the race team, of the actual race team, is based in the UK. So we are in the same position like the other teams. You know, these guys are pretty good. If you get to Formula One, they are pretty good. So they went back to work, not all of them, last week to get everything ready, because after Australia, we immediately had the shutdown done. So we just opened the boxes so nothing stays humid or anything. And now they're coming back and organizing everything, putting the cars back together again. So just to get ready. But that is one thing which I'm absolutely very calm about it, because I know we have got good people there. And like we left Australia, we should have gone to Bahrain the week after. We have got, instead of 1 week now, we got 4 weeks. So that will be all fine. It's all the rest which, you know, with the testing and all that stuff which needs to get done, which is new to us. All the other things are routine to the team.
Well, Gunther, what about how do you guys go racing safely? I mean, we've been watching NASCAR and now IndyCar this weekend, but what are you guys doing? How are you going to, you know, we heard the rumors of Biosphere and everything. How are you guys going to stay safe?
Yeah, there is a lot going on. We got the protocol yesterday, actually, the final protocol, how we do it. And I still need to read the details because it's so long, the thing. But they put something in place. We are very cautious to go racing. We don't want to affect anybody in the countries we are going, but we don't want to be affected from them, and we don't want to affect other teams. So we are living like in, I call it little bubbles. There is 10 bubbles in F1, and F1 is a big bubble to the outside. So we are doing everything very isolated between the teams. We are not sharing staff or anything. But also, when we are in each country we go, the team is just allowed to go to the hotel and to the racetrack. Everybody has got a single room for the first races. So between the team members, there is the least contact possible. The riding in the hire cars is limited to 2 in each hire car. We have got charter flights. We're not flying commercial. And the charter flights, they've got social distancing on the flight. So it's very well organized, because we need to make sure, or as safe as we can be, because you can never be 100% safe with a pandemic. I mean, we need to be conscious of that. But we need to do the utmost not to affect anybody and not to be affected by anybody. And FOM and FIA are doing a great job and putting a lot of work behind this to make it that way.
Hi, Gunther, Dave here. I've been sort of following the esports and how that's sort of blown up over the last few months, and just wondered what your take on that was, and whether you think it's something that you should be or probably are involved in, and just wondered where you think that's going to sort of rocket off to, you know, as and when the season gets going, whether it will carry on the traction it's already got.
Before we go to esports, I got almost scared. I was back in 2017 to hear you like on a radio, Dave, you know. It's like, you know, on the radio, on the intercom radio, you know. It's like, whoa, what's going on here? I'm a time traveler, you know.
Well, I was going to ask you how your garden was. I mean, that's got to be in ship-shape condition now, isn't it?
Yeah, no, today the garage cleaning was going on after 7 years, but I think we bore our listeners when we did our homework. But no, good to hear you, Dave. And I mean,
Hey, well, so Gunther, what do you have in that garage? What are you driving that in there?
You would not believe it. A 2008 Toyota Tundra. That's my car, you know. So I have nothing fancy, nothing else. But it was a messy garage in itself, you know. If you just put stuff in there and never clean it up. So I'm actually broken today. It's pretty hot here today. So it's in the 90s, low 90s, so, and humid. So I had to stop an hour early to calm down before I go on to the show, you know. So now we go back to Dave's question, which will be a lengthy one as well. So you may know that I'm getting older and I'm not into esports a lot. I know a little bit because we have got two drivers in one of the series since last year. But I think it is a good addition to real racing. It gives the opportunity to people to be involved in racing by not having an expensive race car. We all know how expensive that one is to go racing, really. But I think it will not be a competition with real racing. It will be an addition. That's my take on it. And a few weeks ago, I looked into a little bit more because I didn't grow up with this game. So it's something for me quite distant because maybe I don't understand it. As I said, I'm getting older. So not having anything physical for me, it's very strange, you know, just having a game. It's very strange. So I think it was a good thing to have while we were not racing. And I think it picked up some momentum while we were not racing, and it will continue. But I think it will be an addition to the real racing. So that's my take on it. And I hope that somehow with having these people driving esports, they then get involved in real racing with the actual cars, which would be fantastic, knowing that racing actual cars is very expensive, as we all know.
Well, Gunther, I want to ask you about, you know, this strange year of 2020 and with the strange season we've got ahead of us. I mean, this is going to give us maybe some opportunity. And the one thing that keeps popping up is this reverse grid. And I wanted to see how you felt about that, because there is several different ways to think about it. There's no decided on format, but the discussion has been started. How do you feel about it?
As you said, a challenge gives also opportunities. That is always in life. So when it was brought up for discussion, and as we are racing now in at least in two places twice, week after week, like in Austria, we have got two races in two weekends, and in Silverstone the same. I think it would have been a nice thing to have the second race on a reverse grid to mix up a little bit, because in Formula One, we know how the first race goes. Normally the second one will go, especially if you're on the same track, because everybody comes there very well prepared. So there is not a big shifting around of positions. So I would have seen as an opportunity like you. Let's try it. But I always in the opinion, you try something and you need to be strong enough, if it doesn't work, to go back to where you were. And that doesn't harm anybody. If we do it for once or twice and see it's actually not what we expected it to be, to spice up the show, to give more interesting racing, it is something which actually is too much show and not enough racing. We should just say, hey, we tried it. Let's go back what we had before, because what we have in the moment, I love qualifying. I mean, and Dave knows that. That is where I that is the hour of my weekend, or of the if you have more of the months, you know, going qualifying, just outright speed, you know, go out there and put a lap down with the race car. There's nothing more exciting than that for me, you know. So, but I think sometimes time develops, time changes. So we need to try to do something new. And if it doesn't work, we go back to the old way. But maybe we learn something, because Formula One has changed a lot of things since it was started a long time ago. So I'm a little bit disappointed that we're not going to do it, but you never know if there is not another opportunity that we can do it at some stage.
Yeah, Gunther, it's interesting. It feels like an eternity since we last spoke to you just before Australia, but I want to hop back a little bit to that conversation, because as is always your wont, you were very honest and very forthright last time you were on the show, because you said this is a critical year for Haas Formula One, because Gene just doesn't want to look at the idea of finishing, you know, at the back again. We've had this layoff. We're now going to go week to week to week. So, like I said, in many ways for the fans and for yourself, they need to understand that this is a critical year for Haas to perform in, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, things have changed a lot since we spoke last, as you said, and it seems an eternity since we spoke, you know, for me as well. If I think that only 4 months ago we were testing in Barcelona, if somebody asks me about the test, I have to think, because it seems like years ago. So, but anyway, I think a lot of things have changed. And for sure, you guys know that the budget cap has been reassessed, has come down for what it was a few months ago, for the reason because a lot of teams got not in trouble, but it's very difficult to survive as a team with not knowing where you're going and having less income, obviously, this year. So what has changed as well, the car for next year will be the same car as this year. Mechanically, you can change some aerodynamics, but nothing big will change. We need to keep the same chassis. So a lot of things have changed. So I think the last 3 months, they were very tough for Haas as well, because Gene wanted to see what is happening if you go back racing, if you don't go back racing, what is happening. So I think in the moment, we are in a good spot. I think we still have to perform, but I think now the performance, we have also to focus on 22 with the new regulations, with the budget cap. So that is now I call that the new Formula One. It's coming in 22. I think for us, 20 and 21 are survival years, which we will survive. They are not challenging to survive, but we just need to do the best what we can, but spend the least amount of money and let's have like a restart in 22 when everybody developed a car on a very similar budget, because the small teams, or at least I have to speak for us, we will not be on top of the budget cap, but we will a little bit below it. But it should equal out the field, and with equaling out the field, that will come 22 onwards. Maybe 22 there will be still be a little bit of a gap, but then it comes down again, and it just flattens out. So I think we are in a lot better position in that way for going forward for Haas, and I think Gene now wants to see what is happening, but he's committed to at least this and next year. So let's see what we can do. But I'm in F1, you're never calm, and Dave knows that. You're never, nothing is 100% in F1, but I'm as calm as I can be in the moment, that we have got a very good future in front of us with the budget cap, with Gene supporting us, with the new opportunities with the budget cap, having the same car next year, so we're not having to put all this work in again to make a new car with the same regulation, but keeping this one. So I'm actually, the 3 months, everybody worked very hard. I'm pretty happy with them, with the last 3 months, what we have achieved.
Well, we need to take a quick break. Gunther, I hope you can stick with us through the break. And you're listening to Speed City. We're live from Austin, Texas, and we'll be back after a quick break.
As a rider, you know what you like. The power, the feel, the ride. When it comes to gear, you know what keeps you safe. Ducati Austin provides riders with the finest in Dainese leathers, the best the market offers. Visit Ducati Austin on Breaker Lane just east of I-35 and throw your leg over the most iconic sports bike ever built. Ducati. Even take it for a test ride or see what's been described as art on wheels from MV Agusta. You know what you like. See it at Ducati Austin. Online at DucatiAustin.com.
At Circle Brewing, the belief is less is more when it comes to brewing a better beer. You won't find any chemicals or additives, only water, malt, hops, and yeast, and absolutely nothing else. Just simple ingredients and outstanding taste. It's German purity with Texas ingenuity. Find the brews on tap all over town, in your favorite store, or drop by the tap room at 2340 West Breaker Lane, open Thursday and Friday nights and weekends. Log on to CircleBrewing.com. Circle Brewing Company. Born, bred, and brewed in Texas.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Talk 13.7, the right choice.
Hello, I'm Jenny Gale from BBC F1. You are listening to Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
All right, welcome back to the show, Gearheads. We have the Haas F1 team principal, Gunther Steiner, on the phone. And we also have Dave O'Neill here in Austin with us. And Dave, you got a question for your old boss.
Yeah, I was quite intrigued to see the start of winter testing and the innovations that are coming out. You know, the covers have been pulled off the cars. And one in particular, I'm sure there was loads more, but one in particular sort of stole the headlines. Seemed to be the DAS system. And it was just a question, Gunther, on, you know, when you see something like that come out, is that, you know, top of the list to get to the drawing board and try and see what's happening and see whether you can put it on the car in 6 months or other teams looking at similar sort of innovations but not, you know, haven't maybe stole the limelight on it?
As you well know, Dave, for small teams, there is a lot lower hanging fruit, fruit around. So I saw it. It is interesting, but we wouldn't have the capacity to do this or the resources to do this. But we buy our steering system from Ferrari, and for this year we had also quite a complex steering system. Nothing like this, the Mercedes one, where the driver can influence the door in, door out. We don't have that, but. I think the advantages are very small for it. And obviously, normally, and again, it happened afterwards, you say, yeah, with hindsight, you know now. But normally, when something like this comes out, the FIA says, okay, you can have it for a period of time, and then it will be banned. And that is what happened. They allowed it to have it this year. But from 21 onwards, such a system or something similar to this will be banned anyway. So we didn't really spend any time thinking of it. I mean, for sure, it's always interesting to see the technology which goes into it. But the big teams, Mercedes, Red Bull and Ferrari, they have got so many resources. They are looking to find thousands of seconds for huge amounts of money. So I think the smaller teams can just not, haven't got the resources, neither personnel-wise nor financial-wise. So we are always a little bit behind. But as we said before, things like this in the future, they will go against the budget cap. And I don't know if I would rather spend something, 2-3 million, or at least 2-3 million on such a system. I don't think that's enough, 2-3 million to develop it or to develop the car in aerodynamics. So I think these things will go a little bit away, really finding thousands of seconds for real big amounts of monies. Okay.
Well, Gunther, I have a question for you about this. You know, earlier in the show, we talked about this. Anytime you have something happen in the world like this, there's always opportunity to come out of it too. But what about this season? We have a lot of American fans of the Haas F1 team that might hope for something that could, you never know what could happen in a season like this. Maybe this could be something come and be an advantage for Haas F1?
Difficult to say. Normally. Yeah, exactly. No, and you know that I'm realistic. Normally not, but the advantage could come that you need to be prepared because very much we put a lot of focus not on new parts on the car, but what we have got to be reliable, to be in control of everything, because the races are coming so fast after each other. So you cannot make any mistake. And if you don't make any mistakes, which is a big challenge in F1, as all the fans or gearheads like you call them, which listening into, it's very difficult to do in F1 not to make mistakes. But that is what we are focusing on, not trying to make developments, because developments take also always time that you understand them when you put them on the car from the wind tunnel. So we go out there and try to do the best, make no mistakes, be solid, and hope that the other ones somehow slip off, you know. But I think the grid is will be set after three or four races, like normally. And I hope we are fighting in the midfield. There is this year, it looks like in Barcelona, a lot of the teams are in the midfield, and it's very tight. But again, it seems so long time ago that we were testing it that I almost forgot about it. But there was four teams. I think we are in 0.3 seconds between the four of us. And that is in testing where you don't know the fuel loads or the engine modes we are using of each other. Just 10 kilos of fuel makes that difference in Barcelona. So I don't really know. I try to be optimistic, realistic, and hope that we can fight with a few other ones, with a few bigger teams. So, but we don't have long to wait now. Austria is coming up quick now, and then we will see.
Yeah, speaking of that, when are you guys going to start getting together in person? I mean, when are you guys going to start heading into the office, as they say?
The guys in England, they are heading in. Some headed in last week. They started last week. Some of the people, a few more, or some more start this week. And then next week, everybody will be starting because we have to do some pit stop training. And you need everybody there, or of the mechanics and everybody. Engineers, maybe a few stay still working from home. But a week before we go to Austria, everybody will be in just to get the last bits and pieces ready. And I will join them, I think, on Thursday when I get to Austria before the race.
Gunter, obviously everybody's working around the clock to make motor racing, full stop, as safe as possible. And I'm actually surprised that we've gone back as quickly as we have, given you know, especially here in the States. But I wonder what you and Gene have learned being in the home and right at the epicenter of NASCAR, and obviously with Gene involved in that. I mean, what pointers have you learned? We've read on the internet that both NASCAR and IndyCar have all been interacting with Formula One for everybody in the community to help each other when it comes to safety. So, you know, has that been an integral part of being around, you know, around Charlotte to sort of understand what's going on and how they got about racing so early?
Yeah, obviously living here, I'm very close to it, to NASCAR, having spent my life in racing, I couldn't wait at least to have some racing. And when NASCAR came along and said they started off, I couldn't almost believe it when they went to Darlington, but how quick they did it, or how early they did it, not quick. But I think they're doing a good job. It's a little bit easier in NASCAR than in Formula One, and not easier, I'm saying easier as a job. It's just like you need less people. The big issue in F1 is you need 60 people to run the two cars. You cannot do it less. You can just not do it. I mean, we have it down to 58 operational people going to the racetrack to look after the cars. We are allowed 60. But if you go below that one, you cannot run these cars. They're so complex. While in NASCAR, I think they've got an average of 15 people for one car. So that makes about half of what we need. So it's because for two cars, obviously it's 30 then. So I think, but they did a good job. I mean, even if I just see them on TV, there's not many people there. They kept really people away, and they tried to make it as safe as possible. The other advantage NASCAR had to starting earlier was they could race very close by, so they didn't have to use aircrafts to get to the races. They all could drive. Obviously, Darlington is an hour from Charlotte. Charlotte is in Charlotte. So, I mean, the first a little bit further away race is this weekend in Atlanta. But I think they still drive there. I haven't actually asked if some of the drivers will take their planes, but they will fly on their own. But I think the crews, they drive there. So I think it's a lot to learn, and just to look at each other, what can we learn? I'm really looking forward to watch the IndyCar race today. Again, having some more racing, and I find open wheel oval racing really exciting, and I like it. It's very, challenging, and you need to be brave, you know, and I respect these guys going around in Texas on the oval, having not raced this year yet, going to Texas Oval, it's quite brave. And you know what that means? You've got big. I cannot say the word here, but that's what it means to have.
Yeah, absolutely. And well, Gunther, we are out of time. We thank you so much for coming on again. And we definitely want to check in with you as the season goes along. We got to have a lot of Americans that are fans and are going to be, as you put it, optimistic and realistic at the same time and hoping you guys do well. But thank you so much for coming on the show.
You're welcome. And thank you for having me. And see you soon, guys. Anytime I'm here for you. Thank you.
All right.
Bye
now. See you soon. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye. Thank you. Bye.
All right, well, let's go ahead and go to break. And when we come back, we're going to continue the Formula One discussion and continue down the path of all the different possibilities of what's going to happen during this crazy 2020 season. You're listening to Speed City, back after these messages.
When you're looking for traditional Tex-Mex, look no further than an Austin favorite, One in a Million. Serving original family recipes since 1980 and located just minutes from downtown at 2300 East Cesar Chavez, One in a Million has your Tex-Mex fix every day of the week from 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. Breakfast is served all day. Homemade migas, enchiladas, and menudo. And try the Don Juan taco. Some say it's big enough to feed a family of four. One in a Million. Online at oneinamillion.com.
Motivation USA, catering to the sport bike enthusiast looking for truly unique parts and accessories. Stand out from the crowd. Motivation is the exclusive North American distributor for SC Project MotoGP inspired exhausts and the largest Rizoma retailer in the United States. Get the best parts from around the world at the best prices with fast shipping and a knowledgeable staff ready to help. Shop online 24/7 at MotivationUSA.com. That's MotivationUSA.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Talk 1370, the right choice.
Hello to everyone. This is Gunther Steiner. This is Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
All right, welcome back to the show. We are very excited because we have another guest. I wasn't sure we were going to get him, so I didn't commit to it because both he and Jonathan were just doing the Trans Am racing moments ago. Jonathan, why don't you introduce our next guest?
Well, I'm delighted to welcome once again. We had him on the show a few weeks ago when he took his first venture into Trans Am, and that was quite a baptism of fire, but he did it at Barcelona, and now today he returned to the place where sadly he had a big crash last year, but faced his demons. He is, of course, America's top single-seater driver in Europe, and that is Juan Manuel Correa of Miami, Florida. And Juan, welcome back to Speed City. We just had Gunther on the show, so it's great. We've got the top brass from Formula One paddock today. How was the experience of racing back at Spa? You got a top 10 in the second race.
Yeah, thank you, Jonathan. Thank you for having me. I guess you saw the race. I heard you were commentating it. So it was pretty chaotic. First race, I got put in the wall about 15 times. So my car was pretty messed up. But yeah, in the second race, managed to come back. I think it was 2-9 from the back of the grid. So I'll take that. And more than anything, you know, it was just a lot of fun. Like I told you the other day through message, Spa is one of my my favorite tracks, even after the accident. And, you know, many people ask me, what does it feel like to to go back to that track. And, you know, I must say the first few laps I did in the sim, it does bring some memories. But, you know, after a couple laps, it's just like any other racetrack, and it's a lot of fun. So I enjoyed it.
You also brought Picho Toledano and Javier Gonzalez. Are they friends of yours?
Yes. Actually, Javier couldn't race. He had some problem with the software. But Picho was with me. We were streaming together as well, and we were connected via Discord. So it was a lot of fun. He's an ex-race car driver. He drove up to Indy Lights, I think, back. But he's a bit older than me. I'm kind of using the time at home right now to do a bit of sim racing, have some fun. I'm playing video games with friends, and I've gotten to streaming with a live webcam, which is something I never thought I would do, but here I am. So it's like a new year, new me.
Well, I want to ask you, what do you think your timeline is to get back into a car? I mean, I think that's what this is really, that's what we all want to know about an American in your position.
Yeah. So it's not like a black and white answer. So I cannot give you this is the date, because it's all very relative to how the surgeries go, how the rehab goes, and how the process continues to improve, basically. I was hoping since the beginning, when this happened, the first timeline I got from the doctors was that pretty much I wouldn't be able to walk for probably a couple of years even. And definitely no racing for at least 2 to 3 years. So that was the initial forecast, which I was not very, very happy about. After a few months in the hospital, I kind of set myself a goal, because I'm a person that works a lot with goals, personal goals. I just set myself a goal for something and I tried to achieve that. And I told myself I want to be able to drive a car in a year's time. And this was in November of 2019, last year. So obviously now I'm basically halfway. And I think the goal is going to be tough to achieve, to be honest. I see my progress. It has been phenomenal, much faster than the doctors anticipated it. But I'm not sure if I can make it to November, but I'm still kind of striving for that. And if it's not November of this year, if I can get in a car early next year, that would be perfect. That would mean I can probably do the 2021 season, which really would be the best case scenario. I kind of keep this hard goal in there to kind of keep motivated and I just look forward and do my rehab, because it's not a nice thing to do. But at the same time, I am aware that, if I cannot make it for 2021, it's not the end of the world if I miss another season, especially with this crisis where basically they haven't done this season pretty much. It's not that bad for my career. So I'm also willing to come back in 2022. So I just have to wait and see and keep pushing.
It's Dave here. I was just kind of interested to see, obviously you're very strong in the mind, and you've set your goals and what you want to achieve, which is awesome. But one of the things I was kind of interested in is how have you sort of managed to take the plunge, physically with your training side, when you obviously were training quite a bit before the accident, and you had goals, and you were getting fitter and fitter each week you were training. And how have you sort of stepped back into that with only being able to use maybe, sort of three quarters of your body, whether you're swimming or, other means of exercise?
Yeah, it's definitely been a challenge. And it was very frustrating, especially in the beginning. I was coming from, in August, right before the crash, I was in my peak mental and physical state I had ever been. I was kind of arriving to the peak of my career as a junior single-seater driver. And from 1 week, I woke up 3 weeks later after the coma. And, I probably lost like 25 kilos. I couldn't even hold my phone up. That's how weak I was. I couldn't eat anything solid for about 2 weeks after the coma. So it was definitely like, you know, apart from everything else that was going on, the legs and everything, but that was also one thing that was on my mind, which was like, wow, all that work I have been putting in for the last 10 years kind of just went out the window. But, you know, I just got back into it as soon as I could. You know, even when I was in the hospital and I was bedridden for those 2 months, I asked the doctors to give me a couple of elastic bands. I tied them to my bed in the hospital, and I was doing like curls, you know, with like 2 pounds in the beginning, then 5 pounds. The doctors were telling me I'm crazy. They're like, you know, what are you doing? But I was just, you know, always thinking about my goals. And that's the way it has been. And, you know, I think it's actually quite incredible that right now I'm almost as strong as I was before the crash. You know, upper body wise, obviously my legs are still very damaged, but upper body wise, I'm ready to go. And I've been ready to go already for some months. So I think in like 4 to 5 months, I went from being, you know, 25 kilos underweight to being back in racing shape. So I'm quite proud of that. And now I'm just waiting on my body to heal.
Juan Manuel, I've got to ask you this. You know, I'm hoping to coax you onto our show for Austria, because obviously the rest of the competition will start there for F2. And I'm sure you'll be interested. And I'm probably guessing this will be the first season that you have sat on the sidelines, because you've been racing, you know, pretty much wall to wall. So how are you going to approach what this season, and in terms of trying to get something positive out of it, besides just being you know, an audience fan, as it were? But I mean, will you try to make it into a positive and watch it differently?
Definitely. I think I have to be careful mentally wise, to be honest, because it will be tough. It will be tough to watch my colleagues, you know, race people that I was gonna go and beat this year in Formula 2. And you know, that's something that already I had in February of this year, right before the whole pandemic crisis. You know, they did the test in Bahrain, and that hit me really hard, to be honest with you. That was like a big blow, because you know, it's kind of like a slap in the face from reality that yeah, you're gonna miss the season, and it's gonna take a big toll on your career. So I think now I'm better prepared for it than I was in February. So it's a good thing that the pandemic happened in that sense. And yeah, from the other side, I just have to take it with a mature approach to, you know, at least get something from it, like you said, and, you know, watch it from the outside, observe what people are doing. There's always things you can learn from the outside. That's for sure. Ideally, I was planning to be in Europe by the time the season began. So I said at the beginning, around July, August, I want to be in Europe and actually go to some races. I have some offers to coach young F3 drivers, and that was an option. So I mean, that's maybe still on the table for later this year. And that way I can be, you know, in the paddock and just kind of maintain myself in the loop there. So that could be a positive.
Well, one, we're coming up on the end of of our time here, but I do have one last question for you. And I mean, it's a tough question, but you talked about maybe being able to come back and jump back into Formula 2. Is the opportunity still going to be there? I know that's always it goes through my mind, and it's got to go through your mind. And that's a tough question, but you think it's going to be there?
Well, that's the tough question and the million-dollar question for me, you know. I can answer to your question from my perspective if I'm going to be ready, and that's a yes. I am confident that I will be able to drive the F2 car even after being a year out of it. I'm confident that physically I will be able to do it, also with my leg, you know, even if I have to maybe make some modifications to the throttle. But you know, that for me will not be the hardest part to overcome. But the hardest part will be, obviously, I've lost my sponsors, I've lost my seat, I've lost all my backing. So yeah, it's definitely a big challenge, and I kind of have to throw myself in that world again and see if someone will take me and if I will get the backing needed. So yeah, that's a tough pill to swallow as well. You know, I had everything set out for the next 2 years of my career. I basically had another season in F2 guaranteed by my sponsors, and this happened. So yeah, it's not ideal at all.
Well, it's a tough question.
And Juan, thank you for sharing and being so candid. That's fascinating. You're always welcome at Trans Am on our e-championship. We'll be racing again next weekend, so come join us. But we are all right behind you here on Speed City, no question about it. And we'd love to have your insight at any of the races coming up, whether it be F1, F2 or F3, because I think it's gold that we've got time with you. And I know you want to be there, but maybe it'll help.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you, guys. Thank you very much for the interview, and I'll be back next week.
All right, thanks, Juan Manuel. We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
All right, guys, let's go ahead and take our last break. You're listening to Speed City. We're in Austin, Texas, and we'll be back after a quick break.
Winding Road Racing is a leading provider of road racing and performance equipment at each of our locations in Texas, California, Georgia, and Kentucky. But we know some racers want that same high-quality gear, customer service, and pricing without leaving home. Check out the online store at WindingRoadRacing.com. It's got all the same high-quality brands you've come to know us for. Alpine Stars, Stilo Helmets, Chill Out, and AIM Data Systems. All available at great prices and delivered directly to you with free shipping. Log on now, WindingRoadRacing.com.
As a rider, you know what you like. The power, the feel, the ride. When it comes to gear, you know what keeps you safe. Ducati Austin provides riders with the finest in day and easy leathers. The best the market offers. Visit Ducati Austin on Breaker Lane just east of I-35 and throw your leg over the most iconic sports bike ever built. Ducati. Even take it for a test ride or see what's been described as art on wheels from MV Agusta. You know what you like. See it at Ducati Austin. Online at DucatiAustin.com.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Talk 1370.
This is Gene Haas, and this is Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
All right, guys. Well, we have hit the ground running with two fantastic guests, but now I am so excited because we've got Dave O'Neill, who used to be the team manager for the Haas F1 team, and we've got him for quite a bit of the season, and I am going to creep inside of his brain as much as I can
just like all of you, we want to know. We've got somebody who's been there, done that at the highest level. And I'm just really excited to have you on board, Dave. And Jonathan, you had a question during the break we were talking about, but go ahead and ask Dave that.
Yeah, it's a follow-on from what Gunter was saying about just the logistics. And I know because you've been in this position, and I'm sure you've thought for yourself about how you would do this, because it really is a tough time for anybody who is a team principal to try to organize this and get the right numbers. He mentioned that the number was 60 and they've got it down to 58. But logistically, what would you be worried about returning to Austria and how you could effectively save both on manpower and potentially even equipment that you don't need when you're rushing around to three races in a row?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting question. It's like, you know, can you win the game with 10 footballers? And it's, yeah maybe you can, but, you know, not every week sort of thing. So, I mean, there's a lot of squash. It's a bit like squeezing a balloon. You know, you have the mechanics, and the mechanics are there for a reason. You know, an F1 car is split up from the front to the back. So you'd have a front-end mechanic, a number one who takes care of the power unit, putting the engine on the car, and then a rear end mechanic who typically would take care of the gearbox and crash structure and rear wing. So those are kind of the mechanics we talk about. And then you go into the specialized areas, the gearbox technicians, the power unit technicians, and then the electronics, and then you go into the engineering side. And it's not as if the Formula One teams, I mean, they spend horrendous amounts of money, as we all know and we talk about and we love to hear about. But there isn't people, you know, sitting in the motorhome, kicking their heels, doing nothing. You know, everyone has a job and a job to do. And the other thing that sort of squashes it from one end to the other would be the curfew times. So the reason the curfew times were put in the beginning was so people didn't work 24 hours a day, you know, you know, end up being tired, making mistakes, leaving things loose on the car. Car goes off the circuit, and you get the damage. So when you start looking at the operational personnel of 60 people, it's been discussed, you know, numerous times with team managers and chief mechanics and heads of teams. And once you start putting down on paper what it actually requires, you can't really thin it out too much. You know, you can probably get away with maybe a couple of sub-assembly technicians. You could say, well, we don't need that. If we took, you know, five front wings all built up to the circuit, we don't need to put them together there. But as F1 is, you can't really, you know, have these things built up, because it's all lastminute.com. If you want a faster front wing, you've got to wait until the Wednesday to have it put on a van, to take it out to Austria, to put together for ready for Thursday morning for scrutineering, and then put on the car for Friday to test it and do a back-to-back with the other. So it's like, well, you know, if we are really prepared, you tend to be really prepared because you've got more money. And if you have more money, you do more testing, you tend to find more speed in the car or the components you're making. So it is a really difficult question. You know, you talk about the 60, it takes something like 13 people to start an F1 car up and drop it on the ground, you know, with the tire blankets, making sure all the sensors are calibrated, making sure that the driver's correct, the comms are correct for the driver, and all the systems are working. So with those 13, 14 people, you can't really skim anything off that. And then you start building up the engineers in the background that take care of the stuff. And as mentioned, the sub-assembly technicians in the background, the truckies who put the fuel in the car, the guys that look after the tire blankets out the back of the garage. All of a sudden, you're back up to 58 or 60. And then you think, well, you know, what can I do? And you can't really do much. The only thing you can do is probably, you know, cut all the budgets to 10 million a team. And that's just not going to happen. And it wouldn't be F1, you know, if the budgets were there. So that's kind of the number. And it's kind of what everyone sort of circles around, is between 58 and 60. You know, you can't really do more than the 60.
Yeah. 13 people just to get us started is what you said, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, well, it's going to be fascinating to see how this season plays out. I mean, we less than a month now, I guess, July 5th. But with all the teams having to
to do whatever it takes in this crazy time. It's just going to be fascinating. Well, Dave, I got another question for you too. You know, you and I spoke yesterday. We touched on the reverse grid. We heard what Gunther said about reverse grid. He sounds like he's open to it, but I think you have a different opinion.
Yeah, it's kind of, you know, a lot of other championships have tried the reverse grid, and in some cases it makes sense and it also works. I think, you know, my opinion on it is, I guess it will make racing better, but will it actually put people where they should be after a race weekend? And that I'm not so sure about. You know, if you do spin the grid around, and then most of the trouble tends to be, you know, majority of the time tends to be in the middle of the pack. So if you do put the fastest at the back, maybe that's what people want to see. But it's still, in my opinion, maybe not F1. You know, it's not as clinical as it should be on that side. It's never been fair, F1. Whether we're trying to make it fair now or not, I'm not so sure. I guess the budget cap is going to help reduce that, and also, help people concentrate on what is going to make the car quick, rather than spending millions on things, you know, trying lots of things that may or may not make it quicker. So, I don't know, long answer to the question. I'd probably say it's probably a bit more Mickey Mouse doing the reverse grid, and you'll probably see maybe a bit more carnage from it. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see if it actually ever happens. So.
Yeah. Well, let me put it a different way then. I agree with you, actually. I think it is a bit Mickey Mouse, as we say in England, because it's not Formula One and it's not based on, you know, actual performance, and that's very much what Formula One's about. But let me look at it a different way. In the first few tracks that we're going to, could we potentially expect any surprises, given that everybody's hitting the ground running, given the nature of both Austria and Hungary? We're presuming that Mercedes will be ready to go, but could anybody create a surprise given those tracks?
I don't think too much is going to change up the top end, just purely because, if we look at the testing times, etc. I do think that my personal opinion from, you know, seeing the results from last year, Austria is a favourable track for the Red Bull team, and I can't see much changing there. The temperatures are good this time of year, so the track's nice and warm. It doesn't tend to die off or lose its heat over the night too much. So I think favourable for Red Bull, probably. Maybe a little bit of an edge there. We also don't know what the DAS system's going to do for Mercedes. You know, why did they invent it in the first place? Was it because, their tyres were going off and they weren't able to have the correct degradation over the course of the race? There's lots of areas which we can, I guess, get into and discuss. But I think, you know, Hungary is another sort of front limited circuit on that side. I know the Mercedes won there last year, but Max had a bit of a strange race, but you know, he came back through the field as well. And then Silverstone again, you know, another interesting one. I think Red Bull have the pace there. I'm sure Honda have found a bit more power as well over the winter. Did they show it in winter testing? Again, we don't know. But hopefully they have, you know, they've closed the front up a little bit more. I think the first few races are going to be really interesting on that side. Look forward to seeing it, to be honest. It's been a while.
Yeah, yeah, it's been a while. Well, we're almost out of time, guys, and I have a wrap-up question I want to ask both of you. I want to start with you, Jonathan. I want to ask you, what are we going to expect for the rest of this year? You know, we're going to get started, and we got this 8-race schedule. You know, if somebody gets sick, are we going to, you know, how's that going to affect things? What do you think is going to happen?
Well, that's kind of why I threw that question at Dave, is because I think if I look at Mercedes, what Mercedes have done, which is typically German in many ways, is to be organized, move forward, you know, gain an advantage, use that advantage, stay on top of it, and be disciplined to the point of, you know, no team arguments, a one and two driver, drivers right on their very edge, engineers the same. They very rarely drop the ball, as we've seen with Ferrari and Red Bull in the past. So, you know, I think that the only thing I can see stopping Mercedes is this sort of purveyance of race after race after race. And whoever drops any kind of a ball, even if it's just, you know, coming together with a team at the beginning of Austria when they've only got, you know, a few days to get it back again. In other words, just something that is unusual. So I do think that if there's going to be a crack in Mercedes' armor, it's going to be the number of races and the amount of time they've got to recover from them. As a potential Achilles heel to such a well-oiled machine. So I think that's the best hope for the likes of Ferrari. And, you know, you've got to think that Leclerc is in the top of his game. He's proving that both in the cyberspace and in the real world. You know, it's going to be, I think that's going to be where, if anybody's going to beat Mercedes, it's by catching them on an off weekend.
Dave, you got about 15, 20 seconds left.
Well, my interesting point would be how prepared have the drivers kept themselves over this downtime? You know, we all know it's easy to get waylaid on things. And also the other interesting bit is how much do the drivers rely on the fans to give them a good weekend?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, it's something you probably can't measure. But the bit for me is, who's going to be on top of the game once FP1 starts in Austria? And you know, who's ready and hasn't been sitting down doing nothing. So,
well, all right, guys. Well, we want to thank Gunther Steiner for coming on. Thank Juan Manuel Correa for coming on. And we are very excited about these four preseason shows. So stay tuned, and we will talk to you next week.
Spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.